The county's number one talk show, the 9 till noon show on Highland Radio.
And now it's time for the talk of the Northwest, the 9 to noon show with Greg Hughes on Highland Radio.
And a very good morning to you. It's just coming up to 5 minutes past nine on this Tuesday, the 23rd of May, 2023. And you're very welcome along to another edition of the 9 till noon show. And lots coming up on the programme. Today we're going to be hearing concerns about the prevalence of drugs in our communities, and I think from a lot of the texts that come in, many of you will agree in that regard, so we want your views on that. Community Garda information is on just after 10 o'clock, of course, where you hear for the first time the latest appeals and information from An Garda Síochána Síochána, and that and so much more besides. If you want to comment on any of today's topics or raise your own, you WhatsApp or text us to 086 6025000, 086 6025000. Your calls into us on 07491 25000, and your emails, well, that's comments at highlandradio.com. All right, let's see what's making the front and inside some of the papers today. The Donegal Democrat, this is a horrific story. A man who attacked an 86-year-old woman by putting her inside a wheelie bin after the victim had got lost en route to her home late at night has been sentenced to 2.5 years in prison. The court heard that Alex Bailey, 30, of Clara, Remelton, was experiencing induced psychosis due to his level of intoxication and was under the disillusioned belief that the victim was a predatory paedophile. Bailey met Marie McGowan in a Dublin suburb around 2 a.m. and CCTV footage from the night shows that he remained in her company for over an hour. The footage shows Bailey assaulting the woman sporadically for 42 minutes, including knocking her to the ground, putting her head first into a wheelie bin and applying pressure to the lid of that bin. 2.5 years for that sustained assault there, and of course the wheelie bin element to that. The Derry Journal focuses on the very sad passing of Rebecca Brown. Tributes have been paid to beautiful Rebecca Brown, the 21-year-old Derry woman killed in a road traffic collision in Buncrana on Sunday morning. Father Michael McCaughey of the Three Patrons Parish revealed that the young woman's family were heartbroken. The Irish Times this morning tells us that the far right has failed to grow in Ireland, bucking trends seen in other European countries, and Gardaí will not fall into the trap of its playbook, Garda Commissioner Drew Harris has said. He added that robust policing tactics, such as those called for from some quarters to clear anti-immigration roadblocks, had been used by European police forces and had not been successful. New figures obtained by the Irish Times show the number of anti-immigration protests being held in Dublin, where the majority of such events take place, has halved in recent months from about 9 events per week at their peak early in 2023. In the near 8-week period to February 23rd, some 73 anti-immigration protests were held in Dublin, according to the Garda data. However, in the 3 months since then, 54 protests have been held. Gardaí believe members of the far right, as he's describing them, are hijacking anti-immigration protests in some areas. And what he's probably seeing or talking to here is something that you probably see in the past, that something is the big issue of the day and there is an awful lot of activity, and then it dies down seemingly, and people tend then to move on to the next issue, going from one issue to another. Releasing the figures, which contradict the narrative that protests were increasing, Garda HQ said there was a constitutional right to the freedom of assembly and freedom of speech subject to statutory provision. Any Garda response to protest events was in keeping with a community policing model and graduated policing response, taking into account public safety, legislation and human rights. So what is your view? Do you believe that if people are blocking roads or blocking access to certain people, are they within their rights, or do you think that the Gardaí should be a bit more heavy-handed in terms of disrupting such protests? 086 6025000, WhatsApps and texts that number, or give us a call on 07491 25000. In the Star today, the family of Jasmine McMonagall, who was strangled by her on-off partner, have described him as evil and someone who has ruined all of their lives. Richard Burke, 32, of Killigordon, Donegal, who had previously threatened to kill Jasmine before strangling her to death during a psychotic episode after taking unprescribed drugs, has been jailed for 14 years. At the Central Criminal Court, Mr. Justice Paul Burns yesterday passed sentence on Burke, who was found not guilty of murdering Jasmine, but guilty of her manslaughter earlier this year. The court heard that his responsibility for the killing was substantially diminished by a mental disorder. One of the doctors noted the disorder may have been triggered or exacerbated by drug use. Jasmine's family issued a statement which read, "Nothing will bring back our beautiful Jasmine, and all we can do now is make sure she is never forgotten." And there seems to be a trend in these horrific cases that diminished responsibility seems to be a successful defence. It's the second story today and one of many that you do hear. On to the Irish Independent now, and a really significant development, I think, in relation to the disappearance of Madeleine McCann, because German police looking for Madeleine McCann, and we'll have more on this later on in the programme, German police looking for Madeleine McCann's body are about to begin a major search of a remote Algarve reservoir that suspect Christian Bruckner used to visit. Portuguese police have closed off roads leading to the man-made dam near the town of Sils ahead of the official start of the search. Scotland Yard detectives are understood to have travelled in the area, but only with a watching brief. The search is set to last for at least 2 days and beyond that if anything of relevance is found. And this is interesting because it's German police who are leading the investigation now, it seems, into her disappearance. They have that chief suspect in custody. He is known to have frequented this area. His mobile phone was in the location of where Madeleine McCann disappeared at the time of her disappearance. And this is a reservoir that was searched a couple of times before privately, funded privately. But this is the first time, as far as I understand, that police, and particularly the German police, have triggered this search, and they'll have access to all the very latest technology and equipment, don't you know. It'll be the first major operation of its kind since June 2014, when British police were given permission to carry out digs in the Portuguese resort of Praia da Luz that involved sniffer dogs trained to detect bodies and ground penetrating radar. They also had that as well. So as I say, we'll have more on that later on in the programme, but it does feel a little bit more significant than previous developments. On to the Irish Daily Mail, and what do you think the solution to our health crisis might be? More doctors, more money for our doctors? Well, perhaps it's going to be advances in artificial intelligence. It could tackle shortages and improve Ireland's ailing health service. That's according to the leader of the government, the Taoiseach. Leo Varadkar said advances in AI are delivering x-rays and pathology results quicker, at lower cost and with less error than is done by doctors and scientists. The Fine Gael leader said developments in AI have been absolutely fascinating and will be more positive than negative, he believes. On to the Irish Daily Mirror, and if you are a new parent and you're buying baby formula, you will have noticed it's gone through the roof in terms of cost. The price of baby formula has rocketed by over half, making it a target for black market gangs and hustlers, it is claimed. Now, I'm not sure. It depends, I suppose, how desperate you might be. But would you buy baby formula off the back of a lorry? I don't think many people might. That being said, desperate situations can lead to desperate decisions. Concerned mothers described the soaring prices as absolutely nuts. They complained costs jumped by €6 from €11.50 to €17.50. That's a 52% hike in just 18 months. One said, "I have two children, one who's just turning two and one who is 5 months old. It would be the same baby formula for both of them. It's a huge increase. It's absolutely nuts going from having one to having two kids as well." And what is it, about a week they would go through a tub of baby formula? Is that something that you've noticed? Is that something that's affecting you? Give us a text, 086 60 25000, 086 60 25000, or call us on 074 91 25000. And I think lastly, we're going to go to the just as to tidy this paper up, we'll go to the Sun lastly. And Facebook has been hit with a big fine. The Irish data watchdog has slapped Facebook owner Meta with a record €1.2 billion fine for breaches in relation to users' personal details. The fine, which relates to the transfer of EU user data to the United States, is the largest privacy penalty ever handed out in the EU, exceeding the previous record of $746 million, which was imposed on Amazon in 21. The Irish Data Protection Commission said the European Data Protection Board had ordered it to collect an administrative fine in the amount of €1.2 billion. So it was how your data was being transferred from Europe to America and what was done with it thereafter. All right, as I say, the text number 086 60 25,000. You can give us a call too on 074 91 25,000.
The newspapers are courtesy of Kelly Centra Mountaintop Letterkenny, the 2022 C-Store National Off-License of the Year.
Okay, we're going to go straight to Breeda Burns, member of Letterkenny Ward Health Centre Action Group. Good morning to you, Breeda.
Good morning, Greg. How are you?
I'm good. I know you're very busy, so I won't keep you long.
No.
Okay, right. Well, listen, hey, you can join me for the rest of the show, Breeda.
Maybe not.
We can co-present. Okay, come here. What is the status at the moment? Because we spoke to you in March, didn't we, about a petition you had to save the future of the Letterkenny Ward Health Centre. What's the up-to-date position, Breeda?
Well, the up-to-date, thanks for having us on, firstly, and the up-to-date position is that we have received confirmation through Deputy Pierce Doherty now that the remedial works will be carried out at Letterkenny Ward Health Centre, and that it will be, as the letter states, it will be open and available to the local community, which is just absolutely fantastic news for us. Because the last time we spoke to Highland Radio and when we started the petition, the status was under review, which had no deadline, or you know, we didn't know when they was it going to open or when the works might be carried out. So that has that this letter has just brought, you know, it's the first step in a very long ladder, but we're absolutely delighted, and we're delighted that the HSE are keeping Letterkenny Ward on the radar and that they will carry out the remedial works and reopen the centre.
Yeah, that seems to. And, you know, we know how quickly things can change, but hopefully it is putting to bed concerns that the centre would be lost altogether.
Well, that's it. It's starting the bedtime routine anyway, about, you know, that we know it probably will be long road, and as they stated, they cannot be specific with the date. But they said that the HSE will endeavour to have these works carried out as in a timely manner as possible, and we would hope that will be within a reasonable time frame, as when I spoke to Donald back in March. And the petition had just started. The petition was hugely successful. It kind of identified, you know, the hunger that there is in the area for the health centre to be reopened, and not to go back over what we covered that day, but, you know, it is a vital service for Letterkenny Ward, and there is a GP service being provided in Glenties by Dr. Charlie McManus for Letterkenny Ward, a fantastic service. But obviously our hope and our aim is to get that service back into the community in Letterkenny Ward. So yeah, we're absolutely delighted. Pierce Doherty has been very active on this, as have a number of public representatives, Mary Trace Gallagher, County Councillor. There's been a number of public representatives making representations on our behalf, and for that we are eternally grateful, because this is a vital service to a small rural community and we need it to be restored.
Yeah, but finally it does also again highlight the importance of local people sort of trying to take control of issues, doesn't it, Breeda, to organise and to let your voice be heard to the point whereby, be it government or opposition politicians, want to get behind these campaigns. And that's a good piece of advice for other areas with their concerns too.
Well, yeah, I think it takes, like, you have to start it with just a public meeting in the local hall, but I mean, there was a need identified. It was the small rural communities. It's really important that we retain all our services. You know, there's the GP service, and as I say, we had to fight also to keep our post office 9-10 years ago. So, you know, it's important for the social fabric. This is a vital medical service, but also it is a social, the social fabric of community needs to be preserved as well. And yes, local communities need to stand up if services withdrawn from them, and, you know, they're not happy and that they feel that this is a vital service, then yes, we have to work together with the organisation in question. Here, the HSE work with them to re-establish and reopen the community centre in this, or the health centre in this case. But in general, yes, we can't. You know, we those moving, you know, centres of excellence and primary care and all that, that is fantastic, and fantastic services are being offered, but we need this in our own community, where it's been for as long as I can remember, 50 years nearly, but as long as I can remember, there's been a health centre in Letterman Ward through all sorts of recessions and dark times. So we're extremely delighted with this letter, and we look forward now to pushing on with the remedial work and the HSE carrying out the remedial work that is required and getting the centre reopened for the community. But yes, rural communities and any community, we need, you know, somebody, we need to get, there's a starting point, and if a service is withdrawn or if we feel that something is right, then we need to speak up. Yes, absolutely.
All right. As much as I'd like to keep you to 12, I'm going to have to let you go. Breda, thank you.
Greg, thanks a million. Thank you. We'll talk
really
again.
Appreciate it. Take care. Breda Byrne there. Burns there. Member of Letterman Ward Health Centre Action Group. Good news, it seems, but obviously everything has to be taken with a pinch of salt, that the HSC seems to indicate the future of Letterman Ward Health Centre is somewhat secure because remedial work are being planned, or remedial works are being planned for that. We're joined on the programme by Chair of the Regional Health Forum West, Councillor Jerry McMonagall. Thanks very much for joining us again on a different issue this morning, of course, but that's just the way the that's just the way events fell. Jerry, thanks very much for joining us.
Thank you, Greg.
Right, OK. Concern at the sudden resignation by doctors in Letterkenny University Hospital. And this, of course, has been felt by the local diabetes community. What exactly has happened?
Well, you say, I was contacted by Paul and other concerned diabetic patients last week, and I made inquiries in relation to their fears and concerns that endocrinologists at the hospital were leaving. So I put on a question to John Murphy's office via Paul McLaughlin's office here in Letterkenny, and also I emailed Anne Cosgrave, who's the senior operation officer at CELTA. I got a response back from Cosgrave on Monday, outlining the position, and it was fairly stark, and it was concerning. We have lost two endocrinologists at the hospital, one through his offer of resignation and retirement, and another one, Locum, left after just a number of weeks in the job. And that's obviously very concerning for those with diabetes. We now have one locum, a general physician with an interest in diabetes, who supports a service consultant at the hospital. And we have an approved consultant endocrinologist post-shared between LUH and Donegal CHO. And while that's a new post, it's shared between the hospital and the hub across the road. So it's very concerning if, because we already have long waiting lists for people to be with diabetes to be seen. The norm is every 6 months, but this is not the case. It's a lot longer than that, and maybe up to 2 years before you can be seen. And this is worrying if you have a diagnosis of diabetes. So, you know, unless that was raised by the Diabetes Association via Paul, we wouldn't be aware of it.
The concern I
concern
would have to
is it's
what
very hard to recruit endocrinologists, and with the pressures we have already on LUH, I'm very anxious, and I'll be raising it today at the Regional Health Forum as to what steps are going to be taken to fill these posts.
Yes, but I think it would be very insightful to find out why one has left, why one came in and didn't hang about, because obviously that might give us some indication as to, you know, how long we might have to wait to fill these positions if they are filled at all. I mean, and these are personal decisions, and it might be hard to find out that information, but is it because of the working environments? Is it the conditions? Is it because they feel their hands are tied, or is it just happenstance in their own personal lives? Are they important things, if they could be found out, to sort of find out?
Yeah, and that's the line of question we'll be coming from, because there has been, and I mean, you've heard it yourself, Greg, on this show many times, concerns raised by staff and staff representatives about the pressures that staff at the hospital are under. We have a growing number of people awaiting treatment and appointments. There's appointments regularly being cancelled. The emergency department is overrun on a daily basis. There's a shortage of beds. There's a shortage of staff, as was pointed out by the IMNO. And, you know, this swift drill down to see exactly why we are not keeping these very, very important posts and why these people are resigning and why are leaving after a few short weeks. And I think the hospital management and SAILTA have to be upfront about this, and they need to tell us the truth. And we've always offered our help and assistance and support in any way that we can to help SAILTA and indeed the management of Letterkenny Hospital to get the resources that they need to offer and provide a proper health care service here in Donegal for the people of Donegal.
Right, thanks for your time this morning, Councillor Jerry McMonagle there. We're also joined on the programme now by Paul Gillespie, who is chairman of the Donegal Diabetes Association. We had a call into the HSE from yesterday. They effectively confirmed what Councillor Jerry McMonagle has just said. Paul, talk to me about the impact of the staffing levels in this area in LUH on patients with diabetes.
No, Greg, well, thanks for having me on. And as you know, we've spoken about a similar topic before. But it's just shocking that two endocrinologists could depart within a couple of weeks. We're now left with no endocrinology. As the letter from Sean Murphy says, that the current long-serving endocrinologist will shortly, he's given in his notice, so he's working his notice. But as Jerry rightly says, like, serious questions have to be asked now of Letterkenny management. Like, what is so badly wrong that they cannot hold an endocrinology staff? You may recall, like, it's. I was trying to go back through my notes, but it's at least 4 or 5 years since Letterkenny was finally approved for a second endocrinologist post, because we have the worst waiting lists in Ireland. We've terribly under-resourced, and it's took them over 3 years to actually fill the post. And now, whenever the new endocrinologist arrived, he was only in work 3 weeks, and whatever, he was handed a massive caseload, but inadequate resources. Like, even in the statement there from that Jerry got from SAILTA Head, it says that the consultant was only employed as a locum. Well, it's like, it's supposed to be a permanent full-time job. So the questions have to be asked. We'd love to see the resignation letter to Sean Murphy, because the questions have to be asked. Like, was he put in with a full team, a registrar, secretary support, nursing support? Like, you can't expect one man to come into a hospital to try and get, like, the target is to get the waiting list down from 24 months to what they should be. It should only be every 6 month review for type 1 diabetic, like, which is a critical life-threatening condition. And yet it's the management in Letterkenny has to answer some serious questions.
See, until such time as that explained, I have it in my head, imagine this person landing into the hospital, seeing firsthand what's there, seeing the caseloads, seeing the fact that there are one or two other consultants' positions not filled, as you then talk about, maybe are the support staff there or not, we don't know. And then seeing the same person seeing a job advertised in a hospital in Dublin where he or she might be the fifth person in a 5-person team and that can just walk into a completely different working environment. Like, I don't know that to be the case, but it would be very interesting to find out, because if it is the case that people, consultants, come to Letterkenny and they go, well, I'm not getting paid for this. I'm not getting paid enough for this, and leave. You know, we need to know that. We need to know that. And if the hospital management need our support in backing them in this regard, let us know if that's the case. But in the absence of them telling us, that sounds like the most probable reason as to why they can't retain the staff in this area.
Oh, yeah, I would totally agree. Like, there has to be serious concerns exactly what facilities. I would say, if he walks into a job anywhere else down south, like, he would have the full supports. But Letterkenny is so under-resourced, because even, like, the current endocrinologist, like, he has been begging and pleading at every meeting we've ever been at for the last 10 years to say he needs another endocrinologist. So now, whenever the new guy has departed, he's just saying, like, he just can't cope anymore. Like, so it's just the frustration and the stress of trying to run a service with totally inadequate resources. It's can't be done.
Like, so what just, we have so, at the moment, critical. We have had the approval of effectively three consultant endocrinologist posts. That was confirmed, as you say, following a battle. At the moment, we've got one consultant endocrinologist who is leaving. A second locum came in to cover the second position. He lasted a couple of weeks and left. So what we have is one person who's on their way out, and we have a consultant general physician with an interest in diabetes who supports the service. That is it. That's the extent of it. So we're going backwards significantly here, with all due respect to the people probably working very hard in these services.
Yeah, well, there's one just a slight amendment to that, is that the hub, which is the community care, which is what Sláinte Care, and they're throwing loads of money at it, and it's great to see the advancement they're doing now in community care. And community care has finally got an endocrinologist. And on the statement there from the hospital, they say that the new endocrinologist in the hub will be 50% of time in the hub and 50% in the hospital. So Sean Murphy, in his letter there, it's as if he's saying, oh, she's going to carry the can now to cover everything when there is no endocrinology. But the fact is, I've been at several of the meetings of the hub, and my understanding was that the hub looks after community, look after type 2 diabetes only. And on the days that this consultant was to be working in the hospital, she was coming in to look after type 2 inpatients. So anybody that's type 2 in the community that's been admitted, she would look after the type 2 in the hospital. So this is still, there's no cover whatsoever for type 1 diabetes.
Right. So just and perhaps we should have done it at the start, just so the wider population understands. So what is the consequences of all of this for someone with type 1 diabetes? In other words, how is their condition likely to affect them? And what are the consequences of them waiting 24 months to see a consultant?
Oh, it's quite horrendous. Like, you know, diabetes, type 1 diabetes is a life-threatening condition. And if you don't keep in control of your blood sugars and get regular visits and regular support, then it can be critical. Like, if you're left for 2 years and your HbA1c has gone up, it can affect your eyesight, it can affect your blood circulation. Like, it really is a serious case. And, like, Letterkenny Hospital need to take it more serious, and we need to find out why they cannot hold staff. There's serious questions have to be asked of the management now in Letterkenny.
And we also need to ask, and I, even to a point, Paul, demand, okay, here in the Northwest, why should someone with type 1 diabetes in Donegal, the Northwest, but particularly Donegal, potentially end up with dying? Or end up with damage to their eyesight or other consequences of not being properly assessed on a timely basis? Why should we live in a part of the world where your outcomes in this area and so many others would just be significantly worse than if you were in Dublin, Galway, Cork, simply just because you happen to live in Donegal? That is completely and utterly unacceptable. We really should not be tolerating this.
No, the people of Donegal, you know, we need to wake to be more alert, because, like, we have serious concerns, like even cancer care and everything at the minute. Like, Donegal is really being neglected totally. So, like, and I think we need to go past the Letterkenny Hospital and go to the Silcha and to the HSE and to Charlie McCann Logan, Joe McHugh, our sitting TDs, and why is Letterkenny so badly underfunded? Like, it's
well,
all,
we,
it's
we've
all
heard
money
from
and resources.
I've heard from people who are well informed in this area and areas of health that believe that Sealta are too Galway focused. That they, you know, we talk about how far we are from Dublin. The concern now with health is, well, how far are we from Galway? Because there is a genuine concern that Sealta, you know, won all the belts down in Galway at the expense of what's happening in Donegal. And if we want treatment, well, you're going to have to travel for it. So, it's not actually as much nowadays. It's an equal concern, perhaps, our concern from Dublin in terms of decision-making. But in terms of health, our distance from Galway is starting to really impact negatively, I think, on the health services. And it's people's well-being and lives as well. This is not just an annoyance that we talk about and we'll get over, right? This is the conversations we've been having on this programme, Paul, if you'll indulge me for a moment, over the last couple of weeks in terms of cancer care. Far worse cases, but also outcomes. Now we're hearing in terms of diabetes, people waiting an incredibly long time with type 1 diabetes, their outcomes are worse. This is all simply because of decisions that are being made and because of where we live. It's we can't keep tolerating this, Paul, if we are. I know you're not, because you're a very strong voice in this area, but I think you understand the point I'm trying to make generally about our healthcare here.
100%, yeah. Because I do know from several patients that have been in there, up whenever the new endocrinologist has started, and he was young, vibrant, enthusiastic, and apparently he was very knowledgeable on pump therapy. Pump therapy for type 1 diabetes is now gold standard. You cannot get it in Donegal. Any adult in Donegal, they have to travel to Cork or Dublin, and then when they come back to Donegal, they can't get appointments to go in to keep the care. So governance, and the hospital recently appointed a new man to do with governance. So where's he in all this, and how can they now? So if you think about, like, all the nursing staff in the hospital are work under the endocrinologist. And when he goes, what are they going to do? How can they provide a safe service if they don't have an endocrinologist? So we need to find out from the HSE and actually Minister Stephen Donnelly, what immediate are they going to do to continue care in Letterkenny Hospital?
Well, they say, here's the statement.
The shocking thing is, are they going to continue care in Letterkenny?
Well, we put a question into them. This is the last paragraph of it. Letterkenny University Hospital is actively working to recruit an endocrinologist LUH is actively working to recruit to the endocrinologist vacancies. In the interim, we are also exploring options to maximise the level of cover that we can provide for diabetic patients. So there's no certainty there. That's just to say, it doesn't say anything really, if the truth be told.
It doesn't say anything at all yet. So I mean, I've actually spoken to Charlie McConlogue this morning, and we're demanding, like, we need Stephen Donnelly, we need the heads of the HSE, we need the heads of SEALCHA, all in Letterkenny, to see what has gone wrong that they cannot retain staff. Why has an endocrinologist left after only 3 weeks? Like, it's just shocking.
Especially a locum, because they probably were coming in on better terms than a full-time consultant. Last time I had an opportunity to interview Stephen Donnelly, it was not necessarily on this specific issue, but I tried to ask him, you know, what's going on at Letterkenny University Hospital. And he said, well, we've just pumped 30 million euro extra into Letterkenny University Hospital, blah, 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 blah. And I don't mean that disrespectful, okay? Mm-hmm. But we're still talking about, where's that money going then? We did hear that it's probably going mostly on wages and wage increases, and that's fine. There's a huge staff down there and they have to get paid. I've no issue with that, don't get me wrong. But we were told effectively that this 30 million was, you know, to make things better. It's not, we're going backwards. And particularly in type 1 diabetes care, you know, this is life and death. This is good versus bad outcomes. This is not something that platitudes will sort out. We need action, or we need explanations. And if there's a campaign that the hospital needs us to get behind, let us know what it is.
Oh yeah, like, we're constantly telling the hospital, like, whatever, we'll shout from the rooftops, whatever they need, we will push to get it. But like, they're saying, okay, everything is going well. And as you said there, 30 million was additional money has gone in. But like, Letterkenny, I believe, still remains the sixth busiest hospital in Ireland, but it's not funded to that event. It's like, we have less funding than majority. We're way down the pecking order for funding per head of population, and the population of Donegal has dramatically increased now with everything that's going on. So, and even like, just to diverse a wee bit, like, paediatric care, we've been pushing for years to get the shared centre of excellence. Like, there's centres of excellence down south for all children. They were talking about opening it in Sligo, but because of the geography, we've been pushing it has to be a shared centre event between Letterkenny and Sligo, which nobody in the room has ever objected to. They all think it's a good idea, but it hasn't happened. This is 5 years we're pushing to try and get the shared centre of excellence. So that's not happening either for the children. So now we were hoping that once it was put in place, that the adult one would follow on, but the adult one has just fallen off a cliff.
And Paul, can I ask you, if there are people who have money, are they able to privately see a consultant? You know what I mean? Like, the public waiting list we hear is 24 months, but are people who have resources able to pay private to see a consultant?
Yeah, unfortunately, it costs a couple of thousand, I believe, just for the consultation and get set up for pump therapy, but they have to go to either Cork or Dublin.
Yeah.
There's nothing in the whole Northwest.
So again, if someone just happens to have a lot of money, they can actually get this done privately. Again, which I find a wee bit sickening. I'm delighted for them if they can. Don't get me wrong, and everyone has to look out for themselves.
It's more like they're so worried and concerned about their health, they're willing to save up to pay that money so that they can get better care and get onto pump therapy, which is the gold standard. So it's not that they have money to spend, it's that they can see it's a life-threatening condition for them. So they're saving up the money to try and get onto pump therapy. Mm-hmm. And Letterkenny just cannot offer that.
Right. Paul, listen, keep us in the loop, will you, in terms of where this goes next. And we'll continue to ask our questions and put the pressure on, and we'll put in a call for the health minister, see if he'll come on and discuss this with us. But it's not something we can let go. And there's a lot of questions right across healthcare and its provision here in Donegal that we really need to start getting some answers to and hold people's feet to the fire to give us explanations.
Yeah, like, we have two sitting TDs on the government at the minute, and one sits at the cabinet table. So I think we need to get him on Highland and to everyone, to the media, urgently.
Okay, well, there might be a problem with that on this programme, but that's not my fault. Okay, Paul, I wish I could, and I think it would be really important if we could have access to the minister, but I've said in the show before, he refuses to come on this programme with me. So there's not much I can do about that. But Paul, listen, thank you very much indeed. We can still make contact with offices and all that type of stuff. Take care of yourself. That's Paul Gillespie, who's a fantastic advocate as chairman of the Donegal Diabetes Association. 086 60 25,000. If you want to get involved in the conversation, 086 60 25,000, or give us a call on 074 91 25,000. Okay, as you've been hearing, Richard Burke from Killigordon has been sentenced to 15, although there's various reports here, it's 14 years in prison, with the last 12 months suspended for the manslaughter of his on-off partner, Jasmine McMonagall. Owen Reynolds, reporter with Ireland International News Agency, joins us on the programme now. Good morning, Owen. Thank you very much for your time today.
Good morning. How are you?
I am good. Okay. Go ahead, Owen.
Well, you just said there about the sentencing, and there's various reports. He was sentenced to 15 years, with those final 12 months suspended. So usually, I mean, I know where the confusion is, because often the way it's written is that he was sentenced to 14 years, and then it's usually explained later on or further down what that actually means.
Understood.
But those 12 months that are suspended for a period of 5 years. And that was because the judge in the case, Mr. Justice Paul Burns in the Central Criminal Court in Dublin, he wanted to impose conditions on Richard Burke post his release that he will have to adhere to. And if he doesn't adhere to those conditions, he will serve that remaining 12 months of a sentence. And those conditions include things like he must, before he leaves prison, he must have undergo a psychiatric assessment, and then he must, take his medication or whatever medication, if medication is required at that point. And he must also comply with whatever guidelines are set down by his doctors, but also by the probation services after that period. So it's quite a lengthy sentence that he has been subjected to.
Indeed. And before we just one more question on the sentence, Owen, and thanks so much for the clarity there. Will he serve 14 years or can you, could you get out earlier, you know, on good behaviour or some other criteria?
Yeah, well, he has already served, I think it's about 2 years. So his sentence will be backdated by whatever time he has served already in custody. And then there is always the opportunity for every prisoner to gain to have one quarter of their sentence knocked off for good behaviour. And essentially every prisoner starts off with that 25% reduction, and that can only be taken away for bad behaviour in prison.
Okay.
So presuming that he, you know, behaves himself there, he will have another 25% reduced from that 14-year period.
Okay. And the case itself, Owen, it was harrowing case, but particularly, of course, for Jasmine's family. Can you give us a brief outline of the case?
Yeah, well, without going into the details of what happened to Jasmine, she was beaten to death and strangled in her own home by Richard Burke. He also had with him various weapons, including a meat cleaver when Gardaí entered the house. And they described a very bloody scene and, you know, some the terrible things that had happened to Jasmine that caused her death. She, as I say, her two children were in the house as well. And that was there was a standoff between Gardaí and Richard Burke for some hours before, you know, involving Gardaí negotiators and so on, before they were able to enter the house. And the reason they did enter the house all of a sudden was because they realized that there was at least one child present there. So, you know, that was the scene that confronted Gardaí when they entered there. Mr. Burke, Richard Burke, appears to have been undergoing a psychotic episode at that time, which was, you know, there was a couple of psychiatrists who gave evidence in his trial, and they said that that may was brought on by a delusional disorder, but also that drugs and alcohol may have been a factor and may have exacerbated his problems and may have even triggered the psychosis that he was undergoing. But nevertheless, as a result of that psychosis, his responsibility for that killing was substantially diminished, is what the doctor said.
And was that, and the jury in the trial, sorry, before we get to that, seemed to have been accepted by the prosecution? Did they oppose that defence?
No, they didn't, because their own experts, who they called, whenever a defence raises mental health in this way, either for diminished responsibility or for a verdict of not guilty by reason of insanity, and there is the prosecution will have the opportunity to have their own expert go in and assess the person and decide whether or not they're going to oppose that or accept it. In this case, the expert that was called on by the prosecution, that is a consultant psychiatrist, largely agreed with the diagnosis of the other psychiatrist, and therefore there was no challenge to that. Mm. And so even though it went to trial, and you might think it's a bit of a strange idea to have a person going on trial where both the prosecution and the defence agree, but it is something that in our legal system, these decisions where it's diminished responsibility or where it's not guilty by reason of insanity, a jury has to make that finding. It can't just be made by lawyers and by judges. So that's why there was a trial in the first place. But the jury was given, you know, they were told essentially that there was no real option. There was no argument here. The only correct outcome, they were told, is to find this man not guilty of murder, but guilty of manslaughter due to his diminished responsibility because of a mental disorder.
And just finally, in terms of the range of sentencing open to the judge for this type of a verdict?
Well, anything up to a life sentence, actually. The maximum sentence for manslaughter is life. Mm. And the judge did mention that. He said that, you know, if it were not for the mental disorder in this case, he would have been convicted of murder. And in those circumstances, he would have been sentenced to life. And it was open to the judge to sentence him to life in this instance. Now, he did say that before he considered any mitigating factors in the case, he would have set the headline sentence at 17 years. That is a very, very high sentence, even for manslaughter cases. But it was the opinion of the Director of Public Prosecutions that this offence lay at the highest end because of the nature of it. It was a defenceless person who was the victim. There were weapons involved. There was a certain amount of premeditation, and there was such a high degree of violence used. There were a lot of factors that aggravated this offence, mm-hmm. that brought it into the most serious category. But the mitigating factors that he took into account, obviously the mental disorder plays some role there. Besides that, there was what the judge said was a genuine expression of remorse and grief, self-loathing even, in fact, at what he had done. And that guilty plea to manslaughter, which he did enter at his trial, is also of benefit because it means that there's no, you know, there's only for a very lengthy trial. There was a trial, but it only lasted, I think, 3 days. Mm-hmm. So it meant that these things, you know, it makes it much easier on, I suppose, the families, et cetera. Although, of course, Jasmine Monaco's family can't take a huge amount of comfort from that, and they have spoken in court, and they have made a brief statement to the media in which they've expressed, you know, their grief and their, I suppose, anger towards Richard Burke, a man who they described as being evil in their eyes.
Okay. Owen, thanks for your time this morning. I appreciate it greatly. Have a good day. Owen Reynolds, reporter with Ireland International News Agency, and worth listening to or me reading the words of Jacqueline McMonagall, who spoke at a sentencing hearing in April. She said that January 4th, 2019 was the day my world fell apart when Jasmine's life and future were horrifically taken from her by Burke. Jasmine's mother understandably became emotional. She told the court the family had all been given a life sentence of suffering and pain. She said that Jasmine was a kind and generous person who adored and lived for her two girls. She told the court Jasmine had always loved spending time with her family and Christmas was a special time for them. But the holiday means nothing to me anymore. Now Jasmine's daughter spent Christmas at their mother's grave. And those were the words in April from Jacqueline McMonagall. 086 60 25,000 is the number if you wish to WhatsApp and text us. Just some of your comments coming in as it relates to the story we covered there in the first hour of the loss of consultants and diabetes services at Letterkenny University Hospital. A caller says they must be waiting for United Ireland, where Donegal will be closer than to getting treatment across in Northern Ireland. Another, listening to Sean Murphy on Highland since before COVID, his story each time has been the same. No change on anything. New fresh management is needed. There is the feeling, though, and as I say, I'm not here to advocate on behalf of anyone else, but it's the structures that, you know, decisions that are being made in Galway and elsewhere too that perhaps are also impacting on us. And I just don't think, I think we should maybe refocus our attentions in that regard as well to make sure that we're banging at the right doors. Morning, Greg. A man is a diabetic and from the town, was evicted by the landlord after renting the house for 15 years. This happened last week. A few councillors were contacted, Jerry being one. None have so far been in touch, even the council. It did not want to know. That's what our local TDs voted for. Shame on them. I think Mr. Murphy and management at LUH should have been out a long time ago. The state of our hospital is appalling. Mr. Murphy always painting a rosy picture, and look where we have ended up with a non-functioning hospital. Time for a change. As I say, though, we have to also focus on where else decisions are being made that are impacting our services. I met a consultant recently and he told me that he was getting a lot of abuse, racial abuse, the worst he's ever had. That was 2 months ago. Okay, well, if there's a story there too, let us know. Hi, Greg. Every week we hear about Letterkenny Hospital staff leaving the service. Last, Mr. McMonagall is chair of the North West Forum. I think it's about time he flexes his muscles and his board and they go higher than this forum. It's become a joke. Another, I spoke to a consultant and he told me he was getting huge abuse outside of the hospital setting and he feared for his children's life and couldn't wait to leave Ireland. I know nothing of these two consultants nor any idea of where they are from, but it's something we need to think about. Okay, that's two separate callers contacting us suggesting that they've spoken to consultants who've reported an increase in racial abuse. Now, I'm not saying that's the case per se across the board or if it was just the experience of those two listeners, but as I say, it's two listeners saying the same thing. All right.